Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hi, everyone. My name is Brianna Contreras, and I'm Associate Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Adam Gottesman, Sales Director of HM Insurance Group, about the ongoing and critical need for reinsurance. Thanks for joining me today, Adam.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. So to get started, today's topic is medical reinsurance. Most of our readers and listeners are familiar with stop-loss insurance. So first, could you explain the difference between medical reinsurance and stop loss? And then secondly, is reinsurance completely different from stop loss, or is it a broader category that includes stop loss?
Well, you know, essentially they are similar in concept. So what you're doing is protecting an underlying risk taker from catastrophic financial exposure to a particular claim. So whoever the risk taker is, in the case of employer stop loss, ESL, which we're most familiar with, it's almost always an employer group who's self-insuring their health plan. So it's just for one employer group, and it really goes back to how comfortable they are with their balance sheet, what type of stop loss coverage they're willing to access at what deductible level. So it's almost always specific to just a single employer in that group. That employer group is being administered by a third-party claim payer of some sort. It could be a TPA, it could be a, it could be HM, it could be BUCAS, it could be a number of entities that are administering the claim. So in the case of medical reinsurance, there's really, it's broadly based into three different categories. Broadly based in the sense that an HMO is one risk-taking entity we would reinsure. The second broad category is a physician group or provider group. Also, that segment is called typically referred to as provider excess. And then thirdly, there's a category called medical excess. And medical excess is simply an underlying risk insurance company of some sort that's limiting or wants to limit their own exposure to something they've written. It could be, for example, a stop loss carrier or someone like a stop loss carrier putting risk into a captive, and then they're asking us to reinsure that captive at a certain level. So those are the three broad-based categories of HMO, provider, and medical excess.
Thank you. What are the key determinants for the coverage need for medical reinsurance?
Well, key determinants are almost always what's the financial risk tolerance for the underlying entity, be it an HMO, be it a physician group, what can they tolerate based on the size of their balance sheet, and what does their CFO think is adequate coverage for the risk they're assuming? So it's interesting to see the differences. An HMO, for example, can manage their own risks quite well because they're actually performing the services themselves when they're in network and within their own facilities. So you may see an HMO saying, hey, we can take coverage on our entire patient population when it's in network or within our system at a certain high retention or high deductible. And if it does leak out to a specialty facility of some kind, then we'd be less comfortable with that, and we'd structure our risk accordingly. Same is true for provider groups. Providers sometimes take risk on a very specific basis from these managed care organizations that they are receiving patients from. So they may want to, and in a lot of cases, these are things people don't see, but there's something called a DOFR, which is simply a D-O-F-R, delegation of financial responsibility. And so the construct of a of a provider risk contract can get quite detailed. It may be just on inpatient services. It might be on a specific type of care. It might be for a specific patient class. It could be Medicare. It could be Medicaid. Or it generally could be on a commercial population, which in those categories, commercial population patients are much more subjected to large dollar swings because there isn't the underlying Medicare fee schedule.
Thank you. What is creating these catastrophic claims from the key determinants?
Well, there's the most common things we're seeing. Typically and historically, we've seen a lot of things that blow up are typically in the NICU environment. So in a NICU environment, you see these extremely underweight premature births that are extensive lengths of stay within a very expensive setting. Typically, they can range between $10,000 and $20,000 per day. So that type of medical condition is one of the most common and difficult claims to manage, particularly because of the type of facility they're at. They're at these children's healthcare facilities, which have extremely specialized equipment and physicians and high needs and very expensive protocols in place for taking care of NICU babies. Secondly, we see, again, if the most common and frequent thing is cancer claims. Cancer claims can go into very lengthy stays and frequency is up there. So you see a lot of cancer claims. The other thing that we see occasionally are burns. They're not quite as common, but those things are, again, in very highly specialized facilities. Third-degree burns are exceptionally expensive. And the last two that I'll talk about, which are highly managed because they are within certain types of facilities, are transplants. Transplants, you see them becoming extremely common in some cases. For example, a kidney is not particularly expensive anymore for a transplant, but if you get into some more complex transplants, they become extremely expensive. If you're talking about a lung, double lung, a heart, those types of claims are almost always in the seven-digit range. And the last thing we're going to talk about, which is, again, getting a lot of bad press or good press, depending on your perspective, is the gene and cell therapy pharmaceutical industry. So we're seeing that in the reinsurance industry as being our greatest fear, if you will, or the most expensive thing on the horizon. The pipeline is vast for these types of drugs that are coming to market right now. Some of them are approved, some of them aren't approved, but there's at least 50 drugs in the pipeline for every for the near term, and of that we project a certain percentage of them will be approved, and some of them won't be approved, but they do range in pricing from $500,000 to $3 million per treatment pattern. So the most common one we're seeing now is Zolgensma, and that's a Novartis product. So Novartis typically charges just over $2 million for that treatment. And that's a treatment for the spinal muscular atrophy in newborns, typically. So we're seeing that as the driver in some of the reinsurance and catastrophic medical claim events.
Got it. Thank you. Now, healthcare has always had outlier events that are costly. The cost, for example, of the care if someone gets badly burned. But is there a market for reinsurance today because those outliers are not really outliers anymore and have become more common? So could you give us a few examples?
Yes, absolutely. So outliers are part of the tricky part of looking at reinsurance. And so when you look at reinsurance, you have to understand what outliers and what outlier clauses are. So an outlier clause is something within a contract that exists to protect, theoretically, to protect the facility against something adverse happening and exceeding a certain predetermined cost. So a transplant is a great example. I mean, when you go in for a transplant, you've negotiated an agreement on the cost of a liver, for example, and that liver has pre and post care and an inpatient stay and a physician component. And if it goes according to plan, then the fee is as expected. So we have an agreed upon rate of reimbursement back to the underlying risk taker. But when there is an outlier clause says something to the effect that, hey, this claim went completely askew. Something terrible happened, and it is no longer subject to our earlier agreement. The agreement we had in place only applies if the claim falls within this percentage range of agreed upon expense. So if it exceeds that expense by a large percentage, we have the right to refer back to a percentage discount arrangement, for example. So a percentage discount doesn't necessarily equate to what that agreed upon fixed cost was under the agreement. So you really do have to be careful, because if something blows up, then they no longer are held to the same standard of reimbursement. So things that blow up under a transplant agreement, something goes horribly awry, then they can certainly charge much more aggressively than they would have under the prior agreement. It is a complex process, and there's lots of software tools where you can actually look within the agreements and compare them against each other to see what the outlier clauses are. So very complicated piece of the puzzle in looking at those agreements.
Okay, thank you. Now, how is medical reinsurance accessed and distributed?
Well, medical reinsurance is accessed through a broker network of it's a very limited number of individuals within the industry. So there are just a few entities, sometimes situsitist within larger entities that have subsets that specialize in this. There are very few brokers that are placing this type of risk within our business, within the insurance industry. So those guys have been in the business for many, many years, and it's a very small world in which we all operate in. There have been in the past, there's very few now, some carriers that write HMO reinsurance on a direct basis. That means they will approach the HMO without the use of a consultant. That's generally not done in this day and age. There's just one or two entities that even do that anymore. But I'd say 90%+ of the business is placed through the specialty broker networks.
Now, how do you select the right carrier?
Well, selecting the right carrier is exceptionally important in this business. As in the stop loss world, you have MGUs and you have direct writers such as HM. So HM is a direct writer and they assume the bulk of the risk themselves. They're a direct line carrier and they don't have to sub it out to a third party. But that's the thing to look for there, of course, are people you're really comfortable working with. I mean, you're talking about a very large dollar amount of exposure. So you want to find carriers that'll work with you in terms of claim administration, in terms of financial strength, in terms of ease of access and flexibility. I mean, it's set up, the business should be set up as a long-term relationship business. So again, having gone back to the fact that there's only probably, I'm guessing here, but there's probably no more than 100 brokers that specialize in this business. And there's probably 10 or so carriers that even are participating in taking risk at the medical reinsurance. So maybe 10 carriers and 10 MGUs. So you have 20 folks out there to access that type of coverage. And it's interesting because there are things that are changing in the healthcare space all the time. There's startups these startups are trying to be creative in how they design coverage and how they assume risk. And they don't always know exactly what they're getting into. And they have to buy reinsurance to help protect their assets and their patients in the class of coverage that they're participating in. So it's definitely something you have to pay attention to when you're looking at the type of carrier and who's the consultant on the business.
Got it, okay. Now, does HM Insurance Group provide any utilization management, prior authorization sort of services designed to help bring down costs?
Absolutely. So HM and our division in particular benefits from the scale of our company in that, you know, we're one of the top 10 stop loss carriers in the business in the country. So my division benefits from that because of all those managed care services that they provide to the stop loss product lines. So within that organization, we find ourselves advantaged by the fact that they're a much larger organization and we can take their network discounts, we can take their audit and bill review skills, we can take their pharmaceutical expertise. For example, we have a full-time pharmacy expert who looks at these catastrophic claims and pipeline drugs, and we can bring those types of services to our clients, and they can ask her questions about what do you see coming in the pipeline and what are the clinical trials looking like? And do we really have to worry about this just yet? Obviously, everyone's heard about this Alzheimer drug, which is in the market or has theoretically been approved in the market. And now they're doing a little bit of backpedaling. The level of detail she's provided to us and to our clients is exceptional. So it's awfully nice to see those types of services offered up to our underlying risk takers. I mean, it's not always easy to talk to an HMO about how we would manage their care, for example. So we use ourselves as a reference, and if they want to bounce something off of us, I mean, that's sometimes easier for an HMO. They're not going to always come to us and say, hey, what's the best transplant program here? They may have their own transplant network and they don't want our advice. So those things happen. But again, we do have a very deep structure within our organization.
Got it. Thank
provides
you.
Those services. Yeah.
But that's actually, that's all I had for you, Adam. But if there's anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners just about this topic that you think is important to know.
No, I think it's a very interesting subject. And it's, of course, I've been in the business for over 30 years. And so I thoroughly enjoy it. I think other organizations are feeling what we're feeling and that we're trying to recruit younger folks to the business. And we're seeing a large gap in ages in terms of the experienced people in the business. And so that's one thing that is on the horizon is how to draw more people into both the consulting side of the business and into the carrier side of the business on the managed care services piece of the equation.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.